On the phone with me today is Linda Parker, Community Policing Coordinator, to speak about the RCMP's Restorative Justice Program. Thanks for speaking with me today.
Hi, Kate. Thanks for inviting me.
To start off, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your role as a Community Policing Coordinator?
I've been with Community Policing, which is the crime prevention unit of the RCMP, for I think going on 15 years now, and our Restorative Justice Program took off about, I guess, six years ago now. So it's been around for a little while. And in the day, our commanding officer at the time, Warren Brown, really wanted the program because he came from a community in Williams Lake that had restorative justice, and Prince George did not have, the RCMP did not have restorative justice yet, so he made that happen. And so we have restorative justice.
That's interesting. So there's not kind of necessarily a restorative justice arm in all RCMP detachments. Are they pretty prevalent now?
I want to say you will only see community justice in a variety of different formats occur more and more often, I think, as we realize the criminal justice system it doesn't work in many cases. That restorative practice will only be on the increase, and so now the push is for more standardization and coming up with a memorandum of understanding with Crown so that we have opportunity to use more restorative practice in communities across the province.
And what's the primary motivation for programs like this and for expanding them?
The primary motivation, again, is for individuals who simply do not belong in the criminal justice system. It's not just for people who have caused harm once. You know, there's that myth that restorative practice is only for someone who has maybe made a mistake once in their life. That's not true. We have clients who have made several mistakes. It doesn't mean that they're not welcome back into restorative justice again. It depends on the circumstances. It depends on the nature of the event or the incident. We don't deal with violent crime at this time, but that's that being said, restorative practice can be used in conjunction with the criminal justice system when dealing with very serious crime. It best addresses the needs of the victim, and there are stories out there where someone may have been murdered, and there's opportunity later on for the family, the victim's family, to talk to that individual that caused harm, and it brings some healing and closure to their life when they understand the why, when they have their questions answered. It can bring closure to people on both sides.
So how do people end up in the restorative justice program? Are they referred by officers? Can people request it? Is it up to the victims? How does that happen?
Well, for our program, and it's an RCMP-driven program, we get our files from our RCMP members, and it's called a community justice forum. As I mentioned earlier, there are many different types of restorative practice across Canada. Ours is the Community Justice Forum. So our files are mainly generated from our members, our general duty members who are out in community and encounter individuals. They have opportunity to take a look at that individual's history and to make the decision, is this better suited for the criminal justice system or is this better suited for the restorative justice stream? And that's where we get the majority of our files. That being said, we would definitely and have made accommodation for requests from community, whether it's organizations, Department of Fisheries and Oceans or ICBC or other organizations, we would definitely take on their files as well. And we welcome that because they're trying to generate more interest and awareness around restorative practice.
Yeah. So what are the... what are the numbers like now? How active is the Restorative Justice Program right now?
Well, it's active, but for us it's an ongoing struggle to encourage more file referrals. Our members generate upwards of 45,000 files a year. And to date, our best year, we've maybe processed 60 files through restorative justice. So I'm always looking for creative ways to encourage our members to refer more files. And I would argue that many of our incidents and files are much better suited for the restorative justice avenue than the criminal justice avenue. But that being said, I have to be careful what I wish for, because it's a lot of work to process a file. It's not just working with the person that's caused. In many cases, you're dealing with several people, many different schedules, and then it's about follow-up, because at the end of a community justice forum where you bring all of these people together and all of them decide on an agreement for the person that has caused harm, there's still a lot of follow-up with that individual to ensure that they comply with their restorative justice agreement. And sometimes this goes on for months. So when I say we only generate 60 files a year, well, it's a lot of work, and it is volunteer based. I mean, I manage the program, but we have a solid base of volunteers. And so if all of a sudden our file count doubled, well, I would need a lot more volunteers, because as I say, it's a lot of work. It's very, very gratifying and rewarding work, but it's nonetheless there's a lot of work to be done.
Yeah, so I understand one of the advantages of the restorative justice program is it takes some of the financial burden off of processing people's police-involved incidents. But of course, there's a weight of kind of human power in doing the work to get to that place of restorative justice. So, Lynn, I'm interested to know kind of who is currently using the service and what other areas perhaps restorative justice could be expanded to incorporate more people.
That's a really good question. I mean, our members make referrals, but we also have Prince George Urban Aboriginal Justice Society, who are dealing with many files in community. And I believe the school district has their own restorative practice in place. That being said, we would welcome any referrals from any community organization, because we're all about promoting restorative practice. We're not exclusively having to deal with our RCMP files. Restorative practice can be applied to many different factors, many different organizations, and is an ideal method of dealing with conflict or criminal incidents. One of the many advantages of restorative justice is that we have the ability to deal with incidents in a timely manner. The criminal justice system, sometimes you're waiting for months to get into the court system, and it's not an ideal scenario. It's extremely cost effective. I'm working with volunteers. Our budget is almost non-existent. We do have some money, but we use it sparingly mainly for training for our volunteers and volunteer recognition. So it's very cost effective for taxpayers. And it's incredibly inclusive, and both the victim and the individual who has caused harm have a voice in the process. In the criminal justice system, lawyers are speaking on your behalf, and oftentimes the person who was harmed falls between the cracks and just simply doesn't have a voice, and it's not a very satisfactory process, especially, again, for someone who has been harmed. With restorative practice, the victim is heard. Mm-hmm. The victim's needs are addressed, as are the needs of the person causing harm. So it's a wonderful, inclusive process that comes up with some very creative solutions and resolutions for an individual who has caused harm, and hopefully supports that individual moving forward in their life in a more positive manner.
You've been operational now for about 6 years. How has the initiative changed over those years? Have you kind of adapted in any ways or tailored to meet the changing needs of the community?
Restorative justice is really a work in progress, I would say. And COVID has been a game changer and has really forced us to think on our feet and adapt as we go along, because we typically get together and talk to people in person. I mean, that's an integral piece of restorative justice. So now if we have any larger groups, we are forced to use Zoom or another platform to bring people together. There's a lot that gets lost in translation, obviously, when you're meeting through Zoom, but my philosophy is better to move forward and continue on with restorative practice versus putting a stop to the program and putting it on hold. That's just not feasible. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned, restorative practice will only increase across the province and nationally. I think you will see that trend continue to occur.
Yeah. So there are a few programs in the city that are taking this alternative approach to justice. You mentioned the Urban Aboriginal Justice Society, mm-hmm. and of course your office as well, that are kind of seeking to mitigate this disproportionate impact on certain groups or groups that aren't served well by the criminal justice system. But despite that, Indigenous folks continue to be hugely overrepresented in our local correctional facility, and that's the case across the province and across the country. So what are we missing? What are we as a society, as a community, where are we falling short in addressing that injustice?
Yeah, that's a really good question. When we are presented with an Indigenous client, it's imperative that we offer them a more culturally sensitive program, like the Prince George Urban Aboriginal Justice Society. I mean, we are sensitive. Not saying we're not sensitive, but in order to offer something more culturally sensitive, that is much better done by the Prince George Urban Aboriginal Justice Society, where they provide the client with opportunity to connect with an elder and connect with their culture. It provides that individual with that opportunity for healing. When we encounter people, whether it's PG Urban Aboriginal or our program, there's a reason for the behavior, and oftentimes we find there is a history of trauma, there may be some addiction issues, some mental health issues. There's always a reason behind the behavior, mm-hmm. and that's another advantage of restorative practice, is that we have opportunity to better understand the reason behind the behavior and to try to deal with that, to try to support that individual. Whether that means counseling or getting some sort of support in community so that they're able to deal with the cause or the reason behind the behavior that led them to our program, if that makes sense. And as I mentioned, sometimes that takes time. We cannot force people, so if someone is receptive to that help and ready to move forward, that's an ideal scenario for us, because rather than just putting a Band-Aid solution on the problem and assigning community service hours, that's fine. But unless we're dealing with the root cause of the behavior, that behavior is likely to repeat itself. So ideally, recidivism is reduced through efficient restorative practice in our community.
Well, Linda Parker, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me. Would you like to make any final comments? Anything else you think people should know about the Restorative Justice Program or restorative justice more generally?
We are always happy to sit down and talk to people if they have any questions or concerns about our Restorative Justice Program. They can always give me a call. My number is 250-561-3319. Or people can fire off an email to linda.parker@princegeorge.ca. We're always happy to chat with people. We are working on a video with PG Urban Aboriginal Justice Society, and hopefully we can release that to community at some point in the future to, again, help create awareness around restorative justice practice.
That's great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kate. Take care. Have a good weekend.
You as well. Bye-bye.